Hello and welcome to the BizNews Breakfast Briefing. I'm Lucy Ferreira for BizNews.com. First up in the show today, we have Alec Hogg with his daily wrap-up of the overnight market movers. And then the UK government has banned controversial global consultancy firm Bain & Company from tendering for government work for 3 years for grave professional misconduct in South Africa. Michael Apple spoke to the man who led the charge against those implicated in state capture, former UK Cabinet Minister Lord Peter Hain, for his reaction to the announcement. And then finally, we round up the show with the global daily news update from our partners, the FT in London. But for now, it's over to Alec on the markets.
Thank you, Lucy. Good morning. It's Thursday, the 4th of August. Some good news on the markets coming up, but I would urge you to go on to biznews.com to go and listen to Mike's interviews with both Peter Hain, we'll have some excerpts coming up, as Lucy told you, and Athol Williams, the Bain whistleblower, both of those on biznews.com today. Okay, on to the markets. And as you heard, some good news. The S&P 500 index was up 1.5%. NASDAQ up 2.5%. The Pelosi panic is over, well, at least as far as Wall Street is concerned. You might recall that yesterday Nancy Pelosi met with the president of the self-governing island of Taiwan. This angered Beijing quite a lot, and the Chinese have actually said to the Americans, if Pelosi visits, she is the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the first person holding this high position to visit Taiwan since 1997. If she visits, there are going to be consequences. Well, those consequences are nothing tangible just yet, but there are sniffs that the Chinese are contemplating blockading the island of Taiwan. They've sent quite a few of their warships into the Straits of Taiwan, and there's some concerns that this could be the case. We'll see what happens in the days to come, but that story not by any means over. Markets are not worrying about it, though. They're looking at the latest economic data and results that are coming out from listed companies, and both of these are supporting a share price improvement. Last night, some of our favorites had a terrific session, and we'll talk about those in just a moment. As far as the rest of the major indices and prices are concerned, the JSE had a pretty good day yesterday, up by 1%. The Rand was slightly higher against the dollar, 1 cent better at 16 Rand 73, 5 cents higher against the pound at 20 Rands and 39 cents. And then back to 17 Rand against the euro. That's up by 5 cents. Big news coming out of the OPEC meeting is that the decision by the OPEC members to increase production wasn't as much as anticipated, but at least they are increasing production, and that brought the Brent crude oil price down by $3 to $97 a barrel. This is important for South Africa as we look at the potential increase in a whole range of products because of the oil price going up, not least the petrol and diesel prices. This is the lowest that Brent crude has been at, or international oil prices have been at, since before Russia invaded Ukraine. So maybe some kind of normality is returning to that market right now. The gold price was up $2 overnight, $1,771 an ounce. Bitcoin, 1.25% higher yesterday at 23,110. And the Geltech basket following Bitcoin higher, that was 4% better at 447 rands and 35 cents. Back to those moves on the American markets last night. The data that came out was the services sector focus from the Institute of Supply Manufacturers, and it reported that the services sector expanded in July. In other words, recession, not just yet. As far as results were concerned, good numbers from Moderna, the pharmaceutical company, saw that share price shooting up by 16%. Starbucks was up by 4%. Again, a good barometer of what's going on in the US economy. Starbucks' numbers were better than had been anticipated. A big move by PayPal, that was up 9% last night. And the reason for that is a company called Elliott Management, which is an activist investor, confirmed that it has bought a significant stake in PayPal. It's the second day in a row that an Elliott investment has had an impact on a share. The day before, Pinterest was up by 12% after Elliott announced that it had made a little stake there as well. OPEC's move on the markets didn't have much of an impact yet on oil prices, but here in South Africa, we did see some significant moves in the gold market. Before we move off the Americans, though, the BizNews portfolio favorites had a good session. Amazon and Apple both up 4%. Palantir continues its run, even though we're only going to see financial results from that company next week. That was up 2.5%. One of my favorite stocks, and I've made no secret about it, Cloudflare jumped 10%. Spotify, another of our wild cards, was 4% higher. Zoom, 4.5%. Meta, 5.5%. Uber continues with its recent form, and that was up by 3%. Here in Johannesburg, financials had a good day. Sanlam, First Rand, Standard Bank, Nedbank, all up by 2%. We got some useful information, particularly if you're a trader, on the level at which Naspers will be using its ability now to dip into its treasure chest of 10-cent shares. In other words, what it told us was that they reached agreement with Tencent and they can sell those shares at any time they want to now, rather than the restrictions that applied in the past, to take the money to buy back their own Naspers shares, which are trading at a substantial discount to the ownership of its Tencent stock. Okay, so that's by way of background. Before that announcement, Naspers shares were trading at 1,800 Rand. After the announcement, they went up 1,000 Rand a share to 2,850 Rand. Well, since then, the share price has actually come back, and on Tuesday, it traded at 2,325 Rand. Now, this is important because yesterday, Naspers' share price was up 4%, and it currently trades at 2,422 Rand. What is that telling us? Well, it tells us that when the Naspers share price gets to 2,325 Rand or around that level, that's a floor. And that's when Naspers will be coming in and buying aggressively. So if you're a trader and you see the Naspers shares at that level, maybe it's a time for you to buy a few and wait for the management to push the share price up. Other stocks that did well yesterday, Grindrod Shipping, which had been coming back recently, moved up very nicely. It was 250 Rand 2 weeks ago. It's up to 330 Rand after a 7.5% gain yesterday. On the downside, on the JSE, gold shares had a rough session, down 4% yesterday. That's Anglo Gold, Gold Fields, and Harmony. Telkom lost another 1.5%, adding credence to the suggestion that that deal with MTN is anything but certain.
And now for Michael Apple's interview with Lord Peter Hain.
I'm very pleased because I've been pressing the government to do this for some time, because it seemed to me that companies like Bain, and they have been savagely condemned by the Zondo Commission and referred for prosecution, should not be able to conduct their business elsewhere, including the UK, as if nothing had happened in South Africa, as if they hadn't connived with former President Zuma to dismember the tax collecting agency SARS. And at least some action has been taken, and I hope that other action will follow.
Amendments 184 and 187, what is the state of play regarding those? And is this public sector ban instituted under those amendments or existing legislation?
No, those amendments were ones I moved in the committee stage in the House of Lords about a month ago to the procurement bill, which covers tendering and procurement by government. So it was the ideal vehicle in which to press this matter. Jacob Rees-Mogg told me, the Cabinet Office Minister responsible and who's taken this decision, and I commend him for it. We don't agree very much on anything politically, but he deserves praise for doing this. He said he has the existing powers to do it. So my amendments were not necessary. I can return to them and may well do so, but it's good at least that the action has followed on his part, and I hope that others will follow suit. For example, the American government. I've contacted the American ambassador, urged him to do the same, urged President Biden's administration to do the same thing. Because, you see, I think it's really important that companies like Bain that have indulged in this complicity with corruption and state capture have got to feel the pain elsewhere. Else they'll do it again in some other country, if not in South Africa. And they're a Boston-originated in the USA company with a global reach, including their office in London. And of course, what I explained to Cabinet Office Minister Rees-Mogg, with Athol Williams, the brave Bain whistleblower whom I took with me to explain the detail and provide the specific evidence, which we did, that that the government wanted in order to take this action. I explained that the London operation was working hand in glove with the South African operation when this scandalous behavior took place. So it wasn't as if London can say, well, nothing to do with us. Bain South Africa is an entirely different operation. The truth is, senior partners from both London and South Africa were working together in this. And ultimately, Bain South Africa was accountable to Bain London. And Jacob Rees-Mogg clearly took that into account.
Now, Bain, from its side, has repaid 217 million rand that it earned in fees at the South African Revenue Service. You're saying it's earned roughly 2 billion rand and counting from the work it did and continues to do in South Africa. Vittorio Massone, the office head here, he left and is in Italy. What does full amends from their side look like in your mind?
Well, first of all, the Brizondo Commission recommended that all of their public procurement type of consultancy work, right across the board from Eskom to SAA and other state-owned enterprises, should be investigated with a view to prosecution. Now, that's pretty heavy stuff. And the Judicial Commission under Chief Justice Zondo, they didn't do that lightly. They did it because the evidence was pretty stark. So I think, first of all, that needs to follow its course. And I hope that Bain are not getting any public contracts in South Africa at the moment, because I gather they are doing quite well in the country. So to make amends, I think that course should follow through, and we'll see whether prosecutions result. I also think they've got to be prepared to pay back all of their money, the 2 billion rand or so that was earned to SOEs during the Zuma-Gupta period, because there might well be, as Zondo suggested was the case, other examples of unlawful activity that they need to make amends for. In the case of Britain, what the government has done is suspended their ability to tender for public contracts for 3 years. That gives enough time to assess whether they really have changed their modus operandi, whether they are now operating in a proper fashion. Because they shouldn't be allowed to simply walk into public contracts in Boston or Washington, D.C. or London or Paris or Berlin or Beijing or Delhi, for that matter, as if nothing happened in South Africa. This is a global firm and a global brand. And they and other corporates, the KPMGs and McKinseys and so on, frankly need to feel the pain for what they allowed to happen in South Africa, or it could happen again.
Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Thursday, August 4th, and this is your FT News Briefing. The world's largest tech investor is backing away from Alibaba. Diplomats from Iran and the West are looking to restart nuclear talks. And many companies have been encouraging employees to bring their whole selves to work.
A lot of managers are now realizing that has some problematic aspects as well.
We'll talk about the rise of political conflict in the workplace. I'm Joanna Gao, in for Mark Filipino, and here's the news you need to start your day. SoftBank is planning to dramatically reduce its stake in China's e-commerce giant, Alibaba. This would be a big move. The Japanese tech group was one of Alibaba's earliest investors. The FT's Ryan McMurrow explains that SoftBank is doing this by raising $22 billion for something called prepaid forward contracts.
They're doing it in this very complicated manner where they're essentially selling the shares now into this entity, but retaining the ability to buy back the shares in 2 years' time if they want to. Masayoshi Son, the chairman of SoftBank, has been side by side with Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, over the past two decades and since he started the company. So it's definitely a big deal that they're now selling down their stake. And if all these shares roll over, they could be down to about 10%.
Why is SoftBank doing this? Did something happen to the relationship between Sun and Ma?
No, it's more about the just turmoil in the markets. In SoftBank last year, their last fiscal year, had a huge $27 billion loss in their Vision Fund. And so they're just trying to play defense as all their holdings get hit. And Alibaba is really the only large asset they have that they can tap for cash, which is what they're doing now.
So it's purely a financial decision then?
Yeah, well, I guess it's probably more than a financial decision too, because they're also at the same time hedging their bets on China. It's clear that SoftBank is wary of investing further in China. Their Alibaba stake has just gotten destroyed with the tech crackdown. Same with their huge stake in Didi, the ride-hailing group here.
Okay, so what does SoftBank's move mean for Alibaba?
The big impact will come in 2 years' time. SoftBank has been doing these derivative contracts. They're called prepaid forward contracts, and SoftBank has been selling its Alibaba shares into them for a while. But this year, they've been selling their shares into these prepaid forward contracts at a record pace, so that when they all come due in 2024, it'll be essentially flooding the market with a huge number of Alibaba shares if they don't buy them back.
That's our China technology reporter, Ryan McMurrow. Iran is set to resume nuclear talks with world powers this week in Vienna. Former President Donald Trump pulled the U.S. out of the pact 4 years ago. Diplomats will make another effort to save the 2015 accord and limit Iran's nuclear activities. But talks have been floundering. Washington and Tehran have been indirectly negotiating a deal that would lead the U.S. to rejoin the nuclear accord. The two sides are in a stalemate. Iran wants a guarantee that the U.S. won't unilaterally abandon the deal in the future, and it wants more sanctions relief. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden says he won't take Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards off the U.S. terrorism list. There is a management mantra that's become popular. It goes, "Bring your whole self to work." Companies want employees to feel comfortable being themselves in the office. For more and more people, that means voicing political views. And that's causing conflicts that companies are struggling to manage. To find out more, I'm joined now by the FT's U.S. business editor, Andrew Edgecliffe-Johnson. Hey, Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what did you find is happening in workplaces?
What's happened in recent years is we've seen poll after poll showing people, particularly in the US, getting more and more polarized in their views of politics. Some polls you read and you think, people really hate each other now. There is a real difficulty in understanding the point of view of people who vote for the other party, who thought differently about Donald Trump or Brexit or whatever the subject of the day may be. As people are getting more vocal about their opinions, these opinions that they once might have saved for drinks with their friends in the evening are now spilling over into management problems.
What kind of political issues are causing these workplace tensions?
Well, one of the hot topics in the US right now is the Supreme Court's recent decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, the abortion ruling that had held for about 50 years. That's deeply animated people on both sides of the debate, and they are discussing it in the workplace and discovering that many of their workmates have profoundly different views from their own. But what we're seeing more generally, according to senior people who work in human resources, is that more and more commonly you're finding people leave jobs because they feel they don't fit in. You're finding people actually not join companies because they're worried they might not fit into the culture. And you're finding people go running to HR complaining that the guy who sits next to them has offensive views and they can't work together. Most importantly, I think the reason is that companies are realizing the cost of this kind of division at a time when they're already struggling to hold on to people. We've seen that a generation of workers is increasingly gravitating towards companies which they feel share their values.
That's a really good point you bring up, because companies are being more open about their values and they're under pressure to do so from activist movements. And environmental issues and social responsibility, you know, ESG, it's huge for the business world. We talk about it all the time.
So I think the ESG backdrop is an important one. I spoke to the head of the Society for Human Resource Management in the US, who said, actually, we've realized that some of our efforts to improve diversity have come at the expense of inclusion. We haven't yet fully worked out how to make sure that a more diverse workforce automatically feels included in the debates and doesn't generate a backlash to these efforts to diversify the workplace.
And when you say diversity, you're not talking about, you know, different races or sexual orientations. You're talking about diversity of political beliefs, right?
Yes, companies have this rather airy phrase, the diversity of thought, being equally important as diversity of background. And there's all sorts of management research suggesting that if you have diverse ideas in the room, it can drive innovation. The problem is, if the people who hold those diverse ideas fundamentally hate each other and mistrust each other's ideas, that creates the opposite. It creates stagnation.
So how have companies been managing political disagreements among their workers?
So we've seen some very high-profile companies like Meta, which owns Facebook, and Coinbase and Basecamp just say, don't talk about politics at work at all. Now, what we've seen is that those attempts to ban free speech, essentially, about politics have almost all backfired. People have leaked to the press. We've had walkouts at Coinbase and Basecamp in the last couple of years over this. When Goodyear told people not to wear political clothing, including Donald Trump's Make America Great Again hats, there was a huge uproar, including a tweet from the former president. So this is a very dangerous path to tread for companies. What most experts seem to be saying now is you have to manage these divisions and you have to create a company culture where different opinions are respected, where there is empathy for your fellow colleague. But that has to be earned through civility. So it's about disagreeing, but disagreeing well.
Andrew Edgecliffe Johnson is the FT's US business editor. Thank you as always, Edge.
Thanks for having me.
You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
And that's all from The Briefing for today. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to like, subscribe, follow, and share wherever you like to listen.